Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Rockcast powered by Onyx Hunt Maps. It is June 8th, so we are going to knock out a Tipsy Tuesday for early June here. We have, I think, you know, the episodes we're going to have coming up hopefully are going to be directly related to scouting. I'm supposed to have Jim Carr on here pretty quick. Scouting's coming right up. If you haven't listened to the episode I did with Jim Carr last year in June, well, about June scouting and scouting super early and the benefits of that, I'm going to link to it down in the show notes so you could roll back and listen to that. Really informational. I just listened to it again actually the other day just to refresh my brain. But yeah, I'm taking my first, I would say, real overnight scouting trip here in just a day or so. For an overnighter, so should be good. I'm excited to see what I can turn up. So on to the Tipsy Tuesday. The giveaway is still going on for Rockslide. It's a pretty big one. If you go to rockslide.com and in the tabs, you'll see one called giveaway. Click on that thing and it'll shoot you to a link that you can sign up for the Rockslide newsletter. Then you need to follow all of the Instagram pages of the companies involved in this, which would be Rockslide, Mesa Precision, Unknown Munitions, and Kafaru. So big prizes in there. Kafaru kicked in an $850 gift card. So that's basically a pack setup and probably some accessories with that. And then, yeah, Swarovski with an X5 and Unknown Munitions kicking in some custom ammunition there, and then Mesa Arms with a rifle. So go check that out. Winner's going to be announced June 15th, so you don't have a lot of time. Actually, this is probably the last you're going to hear about it on this, on our segments. So, rolling in, latest episodes we had Howard Mee on talking about tracking timber bucks and the raft review he did a while back. So go check that out. New Rockslide. Before we dive into the Rockslide articles, this is interesting. Last year when I filmed Justin Crosley's high country mule deer hunt, he shot a buck. He was like a lower, I think he was lower 170s or like right in the mid 170s. And he had him lab aged. And last week, Robbie sent us an email and with the results, and he was 5 years old. So that's interesting. If you want to watch that film, go to the Rockslide forums and navigate probably to the mule deer page and it'll be on there if you want to watch that. New Rockslide articles, the only one we've got up right now is one that I actually wrote, and that is on the Crispy Ativa Mid GTX shoe. Last year Crispy came out with the Ativa shoe, which is a, you know, just a low top, you know, below the ankle basic trail running type shoe. I like that shoe quite a bit. It did not have Gore-Tex in it, and that was probably my biggest gripe, is without the Gore-Tex, your feet would just get, you know, like dew on the grass and anything like that. They were super breathable, but it just didn't take much to get some water in them, obviously without the waterproofing. So they came out with the Crispy Ativa Mids. So they do have the Gore-Tex in them, which has been really nice. And then the mid is the, you know, it comes over your ankle basically, so it's still like a lower top shoe, but you have a little bit of ankle support, which was really nice. And then with the Gore-Tex, of course, knocking that dew off in the morning has been pretty good. I've been in a bit of water with them, mostly in like river bottoms, just soggy river bottoms where you're going through puddles, you know, maybe once every 20-30 steps when you're really down in the next to the river. But used them turkey hunting, had good luck with them there. And then I've kind of just been wearing them around like camping and things like that. And they're a super comfortable shoe, and for what they're designed for, you know, being fast and light and things like that, for like a scouting shoe, I think they'd be great. I wouldn't put a lot of weight on them as far as like in your backpack. But if you're just kind of tooling around, they're a really comfortable shoe, they're lightweight, and I like them a lot. So you can go check that, that review out. On to, Robbie's uploaded some YouTube videos lately. One of them, him and his son shed hunting, which is kind of cool. They got a new puppy. So If you want to see some shed hunting footage, go check that out on the Rockslide YouTube channel. Now on to some hot news. This, I have learned, is not really such a new thing, but the Idaho Fish and Game is cautioning people about mountain lions in the Wood River Valley. So they've been getting multiple calls about mountain lion sightings during the daytime, and they have hazed some away from people, one instance being there was two young, just juveniles, under someone's back deck in Warm Springs. So, and that was right during the daytime. And then there's people in Ketchum and Haley, that's in the Sun Valley, that have reported kittens with their mother just carousing around town. So, yeah, I've heard that this is not really that that new of a thing. It's been happening and such. But Fish and Game says that be vigilant with your surroundings when you're outside doing activities. And parents should supervise their kids, and people should watch their pets pretty closely. They say necessary precautions include having bear spray with you, air horns, and bright flashlights with you while you're outside. And also, if you run into one, they say you should never run away or turn your back on it, as it could or will trigger the chase-catch instinct, and they may run you down. And if you run into one, you need to make yourself as large as possible and yell. It says don't scream to simulate a wounded animal, but yell. And if attacked, you should fight back. So if you run into a mountain lion, remember those things. Okay, on to the next thing. Down in Wyoming, there's a grizzly in the southern Wyoming range. And I've been waiting for this for quite a while, but Wyoming Game and Fish Department verified that a grizzly is now living north of Kemmer, which is a ways outside of their normal range, roughly 65 miles. So it was just a matter of time. All those ranges are pretty dang connected, and it was just a matter of time before they got down there. So, you know, Wyoming Game and Fish Department is encouraging people to be bear aware and take the normal precautions. So that's being, I've been in bear country a lot, mostly on like horseback trips and sheep country and chasing elk and whatnot. But, you know, some of the basic things are like when you're going to leave camp, everything that has a scent needs to go into a bear proof container or be hung in a tree. And that includes everything from like, if you bring like baby wipes with you to take like a mock shower or whatnot, if those things have any scent to them at all, they need to go in a tree. Your toothpaste, your vitamins, all of the above. Like if it has a scent to it, it has to go in the tree. And even for the ladies, like some like products that we need to use on a monthly basis, like any of that stuff, if it has a scent to it, it's got to go in the tree. It would really suck to get back and have your tent just destroyed because of that, for sure. But, you know, the bigger reason for it is protecting each other, because, you know, even though if a bear comes into your camp because you left stuff and they get into like some freaking M&Ms or something, well, then they're just going to roll down to the next camp and they're going to start pillaging through everybody else's tents and things because they got M&Ms at the last one. And that's basically the thought and the reasoning, obviously, behind doing all this stuff is it's kind of protecting each other. I mean, and you don't want to get your stuff tore up either. But, you know, one thing that we did when we were just to try to get rid of scent and things, and it ended up working really good for just meal prep wise. Most of those hunts that I was doing was with an outfitter. They would have all the food. They would like cook all the food and divvy it up into portions. They would vacuum seal it, freeze it. Granted, we were horseback hunting, so we could take freaking frozen complete meals with us. and we would warm it up and then dispense it or just divvy it out on paper plates. And then we could burn all that stuff. So we didn't have like pots and pans that had food residue in them that we had to use soap and like really wash them out a lot. We'd just take the meal in their plastic bag. We would drop it in a pot of water inside that bag. And, you know, the warm water would heat the meal up inside that plastic bag. And then we could divvy it out into the paper, onto the paper plates, and then burn it. There's going to be some, I know that there's opinions about doing things like that, but it worked really well. And in Grizzly Country, it just, you burnt your trash, you got rid of all of it. Like, you got rid of all the scent and things. So just something to think about, you know, check into further, I guess, bear awareness things or how to prep your camp and things like that. Another little quick tip here is if you have a grizzly-proof cooler, like a Yeti cooler or any of the other ones that say the grizzlies cannot get into these things and they're like a verified bear-proof container, those have to be padlocked. Like, they all have their little padlocked locks. They all have to be padlocked. Otherwise, if there's food in them or whatever, like, the bears obviously can get them open because those latches aren't fantastic. They have to be locked, and you might get a ticket if you don't have them locked. And that is from personal experience. This story doesn't even matter, but anyways, we were parked at a trailhead. We came back down after a day of sheep hunting. There was some people who must have been in there because there was a package. What the heck was it? It's like a chicken wrapper, like a rotisserie chicken thing that you get like from a convenience store. It was like the package. Somebody just like tossed it behind my truck. And so we picked it up and I had my Yeti cooler. It was completely empty in the back of my pickup. And we just threw it in there. Forgot about it. Next day, went in the same trailhead. I came out and had a ticket on my window and my cooler was gone. And they said, basically, come here, you know, go to the ranger station, pay your fine, and you'll get your cooler back. But he's like, yeah, if these coolers have to be locked. And that's something that I really didn't know either at the time. So now you know. Don't get a ticket. All right, Montana. Rolling into Montana, the next thing. Montana House Bill 467 now is going to allow non-resident students buying big game licenses to purchase resident licenses. So this is how that the little bill reads here in quotations. If the state, the student is a resident of, does not offer a discount to a Montana resident attending college there, the rate remains at half the normal rate. But if the state offers a resident rate to non-resident college students, a student from that state may purchase a hunting or fishing license at Montana resident rates. Okay, so that's basically, they're making it reciprocal to the state that the student came from, is basically what they're doing. So if you are a student in Montana, you should check into House Bill 467, see how that applies to you. It's not going to go into effect until March 1st, 2022, but that could benefit you a lot. And they're basically trying to drive students to come to Montana because they can hunt and fish for less, hopefully. So interesting deal there. On to, okay, important dates. We're really winding down in the application season. A lot of applications are starting to come back and people are drawing and a lot of people are not drawing. But anyways, Arizona deer, sheep, and bison applications are due June 8th, which is today. And next thing coming up, we're starting to get into a lot of secondary and leftover draws. So Nevada's second draw application deadline is June 14th. And June 25th is Wyoming's leftover draw deadline. Wyoming used to not do that. They used to be first come, first serve. I think there was just started being such a high demand for that, they made it into a draw. So what happens is you have a unit with a quota. Say the unit has 100 tags as a quota. In the first draw, maybe, you know, it'd obviously be 100% unit. But in the first draw, you know, 80 people put in, They all got their tags. There's 20 tags left. And instead of putting that in a first come first serve, they just give you a leftover list and they let you apply for those things in the draw. And then after the leftover draw, then if there's still, let's say there's 5 tags yet left in that unit after the leftover draw, then those are first come first serve as far as I know. That's how it was the last time I checked. Okay, going on to the hot minute. As I said before, in the last Tipsy Tuesday, with our new sponsor Onyx, we get to give away stuff every once in a while. So what I've been doing, what we're going to do, is your question and answers. If you send in a question via Instagram, Facebook, the forums, whatnot, if we choose your question to read, then you're going to be entered into, well, I'm just going to randomly pick a random winner, and you're going to get an elite Onyx Hunt membership. So for last week, I just randomly picked a winner through a random number generator on the internet. And Ethan_Eskew is going to be the winner from last week. He asked, what's your number one worry / concern on your sheep hunt? And I answered that last week, but I just went through a random number generator on the internet and then picked him from that. So Ethan, if you're listening to this, just get a hold of me on the Instagram and I will get you in touch with Onyx so they can get you that membership. All right, on to this week's Q&A. We have, okay, Kenneth Thrall. He was asking what a good, fast bivy and tarp setup is for following a herd. I haven't been around like the tarp bivvies a whole bunch, but last year I did use them quite a bit. So I use the Bora bivy. It's super awesome. I think the bivy is like 8 ounces and has a bug net that you can completely zip yourself in if you want. It doesn't have like an internal pole that goes over the top to keep the bivy off your head. It just has a loop that you can tie like to your tarp or your shelter, or like if you're just next to a tree, you can tie it up so it stays off of your face. I didn't really do that. When I would leave the tarp, I would zip it up. But that's the next thing, is we weren't packing up camp and moving every day either. We had a base camp for that sheep hunt. So, but the Bora bivy, those things are really awesome and they're really cost effective. Like that's the best bivy, I think, bang for your buck that you can find. I think it's like $100, and a lot of the other ones I've looked at are like $250. So that's a really good way to go. As far as the tarp setup, I think that bivy with a Kefaru super tarp is a super, super way to go. One thing with that super tarp that you can do, you can add the stove jack to it, or the stove jack already comes in that annex. You add an annex to it, all of a sudden you have a late season shelter as well as the early kind of a run and gun for not much weight. And I think that's a really good way to go. Another option, and an option that I used last year on the sheep hunt and a deer hunt, was the Seek Outside Eolus. It does not have a stove jack or the option for one, but it is a little tarp, pitches with 2 trekking poles, and it was a really good one for me. Josh Boyd reviewed the Seek Outside Silex last year, and that little thing, it's smaller. It's the same idea as the Eolus, but it's smaller, and you can put a stove jack in it. You can also put a nest in it. So that, I think, is going to be a good little option for a lot of people. Okay, JFMac87 asked, the best way to find used equipment for those on a budget. The biggest one that I can point people towards is the Rockslide classifieds on the forums. But if, like, be cool. Don't just, like, hop on the forums just to sell all your stuff. You know, we want people to be a member on the forums to contribute and help people, because we all have something to offer, I think, in some way, shape, or form. And the forums are awesome. You know, I've recently introduced a few people to them, and you know, you can hop on with anything. I was looking for a shooting range in the valley the other day, and I just posted it up, and there was like 2-3 people that got back to me, and they're like, hey, this is one we go to. This is a really good option. You can shoot a long ways at it. This one's cool because it has a lot of pistol bays and all the things. And now I have a range membership. So it's a super good source, and there's a ton of people on there that are a wealth of information, and for the most part, they want to help you. So go check that out. But there's a minimum number of posts and things that you need to have to be able to post on the classifieds. So just think about that. You can buy without needing any posts, I guess. So if you go to the Rockslide forums on the classifieds, that's a super good way. Otherwise, I mean, Facebook Marketplace around your area. I've bought some things off Facebook Marketplace from out of my area that they've been pretty cool, and they've shipped them for me. I think that can be a little more of a wild card because people aren't used to shipping things on there. And just searching like sales, or roll over to camelfire.com. And a lot of times they have clothing, like a lot of the big name clothing brands that, you know, they've just overstocked or whatever, and they'll have them on a discount, you know, 20, 30, maybe even 40% off. So go check those ones. Also, for this question, refer to my newbies gear list episode that I did. Gosh, I've done it so long ago now, I might have to do another one just to have a newer version of it. But basically, I went through everything that you could need on a gear list and what you should prioritize and what you should not prioritize. And that was like the most popular episode I've done to this day, and I still get questions about it and people listening to it. So I'll link to that in show notes. Go check that out. And okay, on to the next one. Cole Hank, aluminum or carbon tripod? This is a, you can get some fist fights over this, I think. I did a really cool podcast. It's really short, with the Outdoorsman's guys at the Western Hunt Expo the year before last, talking about a lot of these things. A lot of people want Outdoorsman's to build a carbon fiber tripod. Well, after a lot of their testing, what they found, and I think that they still might be making one, I'm not sure. But it's just interesting listening to them talk about, to get carbon fiber to the thickness that would equal the strength of their aluminum tripod, that would equal the strength, they would weigh like almost the same. Like it would just be a couple ounces difference. So just going through, you know, aluminum versus carbon right off, you know, of the pros and cons. Aluminum pros are, it's typically going to be more durable than carbon fiber. Aluminum is probably going to bend instead of just break it in half like carbon fiber will. You hear a lot of stories about carbon fiber trekking poles getting broken in half and things. But on the flip side, there's aluminum trekking poles that get bent every year. And so that's just something to think about there. To me, the aluminum seems more sturdy. I have an Outdoorsman's medium tripod, and I've used like the Slick 6.24 and Slick 6.34, and I have the Spartan carbon fiber tripods. To me, that aluminum just, it could be because it's maybe a tick more heavier, but they're all pretty equal as far as the weight goes. Like they're all within like 3-4 ounces of each other, the ones that I have. And yeah, that aluminum just seems to buck the wind a little bit better. The downsides to aluminum are they get cold when you touch them. It's cold. Outdoorsman sells these neoprene sleeves that slip over the legs, so they aren't cold, which is nice. And that's what I have. So I don't really even pay attention to the coldness anymore. Another thing with the aluminum is things clinging on it. Carbon fiber has more of like a deadness to it. So if you were to hit metal against carbon fiber, it's just going to kind of make a dull noise. Whereas you go metal to aluminum, metal to metal, it's going to ding a little bit more. I've never really found that to be a big problem, but it is something to think about. And aluminum, just as a rule of thumb, is typically heavier than carbon fiber. It's just kind of the way it is. The carbon fiber pros are the material is strong for its weight. So that's probably the biggest thing. Carbon fibers typically just weighs less, but it's going to cost quite a bit more to do that. Aluminum is typically heavier, and you see that in the price, if that makes any sense. Typically, aluminum tripods are going to be cheaper but heavier. Carbon fiber tripods are going to be more expensive, but you might save a little bit on the weight. And just as I talked about, they don't get super cold, and the noise is usually low. One thing I would like to bring up just with the whole weight thing is the lighter you go in weight, you know, you can't have like a 13-ounce tripod and throw your 6-pound BTX and 95 on top of it and expect it to handle it super well, especially if there's any wind. Like, she's going to be vibrating a bit. It's just kind of the way it is. Just not as stable. So, which one should you go with? I don't really know. Robbie did a really good article not too long ago on the Outdoorsman's aluminum tripod and then the Slick 624 carbon fiber tripod from S&S Archery. And his deal was basically, hey, if I'm packing, like, the Slick is coming with me because that carbon is just a smaller tripod. It's easier to pack. It's lighter. Collapses down more. But if he's out of the pickup and really needs some stability, he's going with the Outdoorsman's aluminum. So go check that out if you want to read more into that. All right, last question here. Justin.Ellison30. When hunting lowland mule deer, are there particular facing hills and slopes that they prefer to bed? So I haven't really found that it's like, oh yeah, those south facing slopes, they love them or not. It seems like their first bed during the day, they'll leave from probably a food source. If it's in the low country around here, it's like a good food source, and they'll start traveling to their bed. And I found that they'll bed more on top or like in the upper part of the hills for dang sure. For a little while, maybe an hour, 2 hours, maybe during the morning. And then it seems like when they go to their afternoon bed, they're going like lower in a canyon that's like shaded all day. So, you know, those are going to be more like your eastern facing slopes, your southeastern facing slopes is what I've seen where I'm from. Most of the deer are going to those southeastern facing slopes, but really I think they're not going to have a ton to choose from. So if you have a drainage that runs, you know, any direction, especially in the afternoons, just look at where that thing is shaded. And that's probably where they're going to be bedded, is up against that shade, which is going to be more of a south, like I was talking about, kind of a southern, like an eastern facing slope. But I've also seen them be bedded in a little, like a little cut, like a little washout, basically freaking right on the sun, getting beat to death. So that's kind of a tricky one, because it doesn't seem like, you know, we don't have in the lower country, there's not these giant big slopes that you're looking at. They're like a lot of little cuts and drainages and washouts and things like that, and it can look really flat, and they can walk down in a little depression and feel super safe there, and you can't see them. So but that's what I would say. Look at the area you're going into, look at those washes, utilize Google Earth and the sun slider tool. If you don't know what that is, if you go into like the actual Google Earth app, like don't go into it off your computer, like on through your web browser, like download it onto your computer. There's a little slider, and it's like a date slider. And then there's also one that's like a time throughout the day slider. So you can actually move the sun, and it'll move shadows as you move the sun. So utilize a tool like that and just look at those little cuts and drainages and and see where that sun is going to start casting a shadow. I would say about like 11, 12 o'clock, see where that sun's going to start casting shadows. It's going to last the whole day. And there's probably a decent chance that a deer is going to be wanting to bed in there to be in the shade, especially those early season hot days and months. So I think that's all the questions we have. Hopefully I answered them decently. Once again, we want to thank our new sponsor, Onyx Hunt Maps. If you go to onyxmaps.com/hunt and you go to sign up for a membership, use the code ROCKCAST, ROKCAST, for 20% off. And yeah, that's great. One thing that has been nice and just a good tip for using Onyx is on the pins, using photos and the notes. So in each of those pins, you can write little notes about it, you know, like what kind of deer it was or whatever you saw. That's pretty self-explanatory. Then you can add photos with it as well, which I found to be really nice. I was looking over an area the other day and Liard had pictures on her phone of like, hey, this is what this looks like. And you can actually take those and you can attach them to a pin. So if I were to get into an area and, you know, it was a really cool glassing point or whatever, and maybe I was, you know, trying to help one of my buddies scout or whatever, could get to that thing. I could take some pictures, do like a, you know, take four pictures, do like a 360. And if I was to share those with a buddy or, you know, go back into that area a few years later, I could click on that and be like, oh yeah, that's what that looks like. Oh, so you can see, you know, you can see a certain drainage that you were wondering if you could or not. Because Google Earth will lie to you and make you think that you'll be able to see things that you can't. So that's a really cool tool. That's going to be the Onyx tip of the week. Use your photos in your pins and use your notes too. And it'll really help you when you're trying to help a buddy or in the future when you go back to whatever unit. So again, Onyx Hunt Maps, onyxmaps.com/hunt with code ROCKCAST for 20% off. And okay, on to workout of the week. This one's super cool. It's called the Deadfall Workout from Mountain Tough. So for what they're calling the warm-up, they want you to do 3 rounds of hip thrusts. So that's going to loosen your hips up, and then do 20 band walks. That's also going to kind of loosen those hips up, and then 20 mountain climbers. They're trying to get the range of motion there. So 3 rounds of that, and then do both forwards and backwards hurdles. Again, that's pretty much stretching your hips out and getting your legs warmed up. And they want you to do then lateral lunges and then these things called touchdowns, which there's no way that I can explain it on a podcast, but they do have this workout in a video I'm going to attach in the show notes. And then the actual workout of this is you're going to do 7 rounds of 1 minute on the VersaClimber, and then you're going to do 10 step-ups and 5 pull-ups. You're going to do that 7 times. Some things that you can do instead of using a VersaClimber, because honestly, I didn't know what the hell that was until I just watched a video this morning. You can do like a treadmill at max incline or a bike on high resistance or anything that's going to get your legs going and your heart rate up is what they're aiming for. And yeah, so that's the Deadfall workouts. They made that specifically for Deadfall in what they called in their show notes, the wicker basket of hunting. And one of the cool things about Mountain Tough in their whole program, what they've done is they took, you know, it was built by hunters, you know, for mountain hunters, for situations like this. Like they were getting people that were complaining about like, wow, when I side hill, you know, my calves get wrecked, or, you know, when I'm doing whatever, my hips really hurt. So they're like, okay, well, that's because you know, that's the first time that your hips have been used in that motion forever, even though you've been training all month, you know, hiking or doing whatever. So all the Mountain Tough workouts, they've taken them and, you know, done specific workouts to try to help you that directly apply to situations that you're going to find yourself out in the mountains. So, cool. Upcoming episodes, we're going to start doing some more scouting things. If you guys have any suggestions, especially on the scouting stuff, go ahead and shoot me a message anywhere on any of the platforms, and we'll try to get it in there. But for now, everybody be safe. Start thinking about scouting, because June is not too early. If that snow line is up, and you know, if the deer want to be there, if the grass has started growing, it's green up there, that's where the deer and elk are going to want to be. So start scouting and getting on e-scouting, and keep listening to the podcast, and we'll try to get you as much information as we can. So thanks for listening. I'll talk to you guys in a couple weeks.